Hello and welcome to the EG Property Podcast with me, EG editor Sam McClary. This episode of the podcast was recorded as part of our EG Future of UK Cities event, an extravaganza of discussions with industry experts around the topics that will make sure our cities don't just survive, but thrive. If you'd prefer to watch this conversation, please do head over to www.egi.co.uk, the future of UK cities. This topic is one that I believe really gets to the heart of real estate. It's all about empowering people and listening to them. If we are to create the places that thrive, we absolutely have to listen to the people. And as you'll find out in this podcast, focus on some essential C words. So please sit back and enjoy this 30-minute conversation with myself, Josh Artis from Centric Lab, Jen Hartley from Invest Newcastle, Sarah Hayford from The Land Collective, and Adam Scott from Free State. Thank you so much for joining us today. As I said, really, really looking forward to this conversation. I think it's one of the most important that we'll have over the course of this event. And I guess I want to start with the question that might be the most difficult to answer. It might actually be the easiest. I'm not quite sure, but what really needs to happen within real estate to truly understand what it is that the people we are building and developing and creating spaces for really want? And I'm going to direct that first to you, Adam, if I may.
Yeah, well, I think from my point of view, I'd say, you know, we have to start by asking people. And I think, you know, so a lot of our background, we work with, you know, mega brands like Samsung and Sony and Apple when we first began, and they don't develop a product and think about the product first and then try and find an audience for that product. They start by digging into people's enthusiasms, their motivations, their needs. And then based on that, they'll create something that isn't just sales driven. It isn't just about the transaction. It doesn't live or die by whether you buy it or not. It lives or dies by whether you get involved, whether you tell other people about it. So if I was them, if I was thinking about an ideal, I'd say you start with investigation. You start by understanding that audience, and then you imagine the ideal program. You think about it in terms of time, and then only then do you start to think about what it means for the place, what it means for the architecture, what it means for the infrastructure. And I think too often, it's the other way around. It seems to be a process predicated on an end product, and then people think about the ideal process or ideal experience as an overlay. And for me, it's totally the wrong way around. So that would be my starter for 10 for you.
So that's the simple answer, isn't it? Ask people, which sounds so, so simple, but we've clearly not done it very well in the past. And Sarah, I'd like to turn to you, because I know you speak to a lot of people because you're trying to attract more people to this wonderful industry of ours, and have a wider group of people that we can ask questions to, maybe feel a bit more comfortable asking questions rather than having to go out to the real world and ask people. What are your thoughts about this sort of citizen engagement and our need to really listen to people?
Yeah, I completely agree with what Adam said as well. I think it goes around just asking people, being in the right place at the right time, and just, you know, having access, really putting accessibility as a priority when you're talking to new audience about what they want. For example, we were asking some of our kind of student network about the schools that they went to. And quite often we realise when they went to a school, predominantly secondary school, they had a brief period where their school was being redesigned, refurbished, renovated, or they were adding new buildings on, things like that. Now, when we asked the amount of people where you actually consulted throughout that whole process, did your school actually get the students involved with this whole design, you know, where you consulted, did they ask you what you wanted, would the library look like this or like that? And most of them actually said no. So it's even proof, like even things like schools, which directly attract, you know, directly impact students' learning abilities and capabilities, they weren't even consulted in that respect. So I think it's actually going out there, asking the right questions, and actually going where that audience will be. So sometimes it's just a case of, you know, maybe putting things online more. If you realize that more young people are online, go online, say we have a planning consultancy on this day and we want you to come, your voice is important. Because I feel like with us, we work with a lot of young people and students, and most of them feel completely disenfranchised with the whole process. They don't know what's going on in their towns until they maybe see it getting built. So, you know, maybe engaging people at a much earlier stage and asking them for their input, I think, is seriously important.
Thank you, Sarah. Josh, do you think we know what the right questions to ask are? I know in your work, obviously, you look at health and you think about how our brains work, I suppose, and the impact that has on us and the places around us. Do you think that this industry is able to ask the right questions of people to get the answers that really matter?
Yes, they are able to ask the right questions when they don't design the questions to just be about themselves. And I think that's one of the blockages that happens at the moment in the kind of engagement and consultation process, is it's always directed on, do you like what we're going to do here, or do you like what we're going to do there, rather than, can I learn a little bit more about you? And I think that's where the break is aligning, because when I'm not a scientist, but the guys that I work with are. And part of designing surveys and questions is the art of being a scientist in this way. And one of our advisors said that, you know, being a neuroscientist is not strapping people up to headsets, it's asking what type of questions to ask. So when that means that you're, you know, for example, looking at a regeneration-based project, your question is, do you want to see this or do you want to see that? It's, let me learn more about your lived experience. And you craft and design questions in order to identify certain, for example, health markers that wouldn't come from just saying, oh, yes, I'm healthy, or yes, I'm happy. You need to understand more, you know, are people waking up twice in the night, for example? Are they having long commutes as a result? And then you start to see a picture of the health of this area. So when it comes to engagement, I'd say it's more important to learn about your community by not asking them questions about your project and what they think about you. You're trying to understand them and what makes them tick, a little bit more what Adam was saying, but really designing these questionnaires and these processes to uncover the insights you didn't expect to see, and the ones that you quite frankly are going to be challenged by. And I think only when you align your value system to the citizens' value systems will you see some correlation. So, I mean, I have another point, but I'll stop for there and maybe bring it up later.
Fantastic. Thanks, Josh. Jen, from a Newcastle perspective, How is the city engaging with its citizens, and how are the citizens engaging with the city?
Yeah, good question. And I've got to say, I sort of agree with all that's been said before by the other panelists. It is about public, not just public consultation, but inclusivity when we're looking at, engaging citizens in our sites and in our buildings, and making sure that we understand what the challenges would be from their point of view. So as a city, we've kind of really pushing forward on this kind of inclusive growth agenda, and making sure that, you know, we really get to the root of what our communities want. So we're not just building, you know, huge new sites in the city, but, you know, not really bringing citizens along or engaging them in the process of it. So we do an awful lot of work with community groups and with sort of different generations to really kind of get their steer on what they want to see out of the cities, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are going to be living it. And what we don't want is for our sites to be sort of islands in the middle, and, you know, people who just sort of commute in, work in a building, and then leave again at the end of it. So yeah, so we're doing quite a lot of that at the moment, and we're working with, you know, investors and developers to make sure that they understand the sort of the social impact of coming into the city, and part of that is to work alongside the citizens in that way. So yeah, it's definitely a sort of a movement that we're kind of pushing forward at the moment. And actually, the current pandemic has made it even more acute that, you know, we need to address what those challenges are, you know, alongside citizens, and not just us as a city dictate what should be done. to people's lives. So yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jen. And I definitely want to come back to how we engage with communities in this COVID world that we're living in at the moment. But you mentioned their social impact and people really taking the sort of value, the social value into account now. But I wonder if that is really what's happening. Does financial impact still outweigh social impact? And does real estate, or has real estate in the past perhaps taken away that power from the citizen, taken their eye off the ball of social impact to make sure that they can deliver a product that is value enhancing, and they've not really thought about what is best for that individual family or person that they are building for? Josh, I'm going to throw that to you because you were nodding quietly.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to throw it back with a very kind of like meta concept. So forgive me here. I know I work with scientists, but the idea that, and I think the problem is that real estate in general is concept on space, whereas we need to be thinking about time. And people live throughout time, but we're always asking questions and we're designing for spaces. We're not asking about the concept of people's time, short, medium, and long term, and looking around that. So I think that's where there is this inherent problem. And I think that the point that I was hoping to bring up maybe in that first segment was, quite simply, real estate doesn't put its skin in the game. And I think the one takeaway, if I would give one, is to go read Nassim Nicholas Taleb's book, Skin in the Game, where he talks about the success of corporate executives. Or why would you trust a corporate executive that doesn't put not only their own skin in the game, but their business's skin in the game in what they say and what they do? And I think it's very easy, because there is no financial relationship, no true financial outcome related to what someone says they do, whether it be a developer or a landlord or any form of social impact work on their own bottom line. It doesn't exist, nor do the negative externalities caused by development construction, whether you want to say that's environmental or social or any other forms, is accounted for. So how do you trust? Like, there is no trust in that relationship. And so I think that's where there is this break. And, you know, the real estate industry can lead on this conversation, which some people are starting to show, or it can hide away. And I think one of the key examples, something maybe we've been talking about before, Sam, you know, I won't bring up names, but very simply, you know, there is a problem when we assess, and I will just focus on health, because obviously the pandemic has been a conversation about health, that the less we understand our community and work with them, the more we're going to impact them. And the more we sit between our convenient structures of policy, the more we're going to allow communities to suffer. And particularly air pollution, the remediation of brownfield land against communities who may be slightly more, slightly on the lower sort of socioeconomic ladder as such, are gravely impacted by the externalities caused by construction. So why would someone even say, yeah, your values are mine, I trust you, I'll engage with you, when there's no inference whatsoever that the industry is actually going, your success is going to lead to my success, rather than if you just approve me here, then I succeed and I'm going to leave you by. So I think that's a very, like, to me, that's a very crucial point. Put your skin in the game and people will change their relationship with you.
Fantastic. Thanks. Thanks, Josh. Adam, you're nodding as well. Skin in the game?
Well, I think... Well, I was nodding also a bit about the beginning about being this product thing. I think in many ways, so much real estate is a very bad product. You know, great products get better over time. You know, the reason kind of Apple killed Nokia is Nokia fell in love with the hardware and cared little for the software. They cared little for the idea that you could make it your own, you could add to it, it would get better with time. And I think, you know, that's what, you know, to some extent, although I'm being a bit crass here, I think what also I'd like to add to what Josh is saying, this thing about getting better with time, about being valued, because you don't just attract an audience, you know, you don't just reduce all people to customers and judge them whether they buy into it to live there or learn there or work there. You're also valued by the extent to which people get involved. They fall in love with it. They tell others. And that is what great makes for great places as brands. That, you know, people talk about them, they spread the word. And I think we see remarkably little of that within the real estate industry. So I think going back to what Josh was saying about time, if you were measuring more about that journey of influence over time, I think you'd create a much better product. And in that sense, that value system that Josh mentioned in terms of maybe a purpose that is a shared purpose about being both commercially astute and socially useful can be the same thing. And I think we should get into that. But that's quite enough from me. I'll back to you, Sam.
Definitely. Let's get into that. There were two concepts there, more than two, but the two that I picked out that I really, really liked was, I wonder whether we should think of people as citizens, as communities, as the software, while the real estate is the hardware. And just, I think, really powerful that, you know, love is the power here. If you can get people to love something, they will do all sorts to make it flourish and make it happen. So let's talk a little bit more about that, how we change that relationship, I suppose, to one of love. Sounds a bit weird if you're saying that in a real estate debate, but we'll go with it. And how we think about, you know, really continually developing the software so it works for people. Sarah, I'm going to throw that to you.
I think we just need to start again, really. I think the industry has gotten quite bogged down with the financial kind of factor being the most important. And I think in that process, we've forgotten a lot about people, what they actually need, and what they actually need to thrive in any kind of given community. I think once we kind of strip that back, we can start again and start a new process. That's why in the last couple of years, you've seen a lot more kind of smaller real estate brands kind of be centered around people, community, placemaking and things like that. And those are really, really important. And people flock towards them because they're authentic and they're actually getting their voices listened to. You know, it could be about incorporating greener spaces or designing spaces in a more space efficient way where people can actually maximize their lifestyles without having to pay premiums and things like that. So I think as an industry, the majority actually just need to strip back and start from fresh, because I think that is where we can get the most engagement and build up trust with the community again.
Fantastic. Trust is a word we're hearing a lot more in real estate. And Jen, I'd like to get your views on that. Do we need to start from scratch? Do we need to really work hard on building up trust between, you know, place and person?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of work to be done. I don't know whether we can start from scratch or whether we can build on what exists already. I mean, Sarah mentioned, you know, some of the smaller organisations have been doing it for a long time and they've been, you know, more inclusive than others. Whereas now we're starting to see some of the big institutional investors, you know, the likes of L&G and Aviva and others that are really, you know, coming on board with this and looking at this kind of, I think the phrase is it inclusive capitalism, but really looking at, you know, the impact on the area as a whole and bringing the citizens, you know, alongside it. We're working on a number of kind of big projects in Newcastle at the moment, where we're looking at, you know, at space and how we change it so that it's not only multi-generational, but multifunctional, you know, softer spaces, because we know that, you know, the world of kind of your real estate and your kind of your workspace is changing. And actually, you know, the current pandemic has kind of accelerated that change quite a bit. So I think, it's starting to be seen. And obviously from a city council point of view, we need to also, you know, win back or win some trust from our citizens that, you know, we do listen to them and we are, you know, we want to do this in collaboration with the, you know, with the residents of the city, so that we've, you know, we've got a place that they are invested in themselves and that they know, you know, will address some of the inequalities that sometimes, you know, we're at fear of missing just through, you know, your commercial real estate transactions that, you know, we've all done in the past. So, yeah, I hope that answers it from my point of view.
Thank you. It does. And we're talking here, I guess, about you know, sort of real estate starting from scratch as well. But I wonder how much of the onus as well needs to be on the citizen to step up and step forward and say, you know, a phrase that you've used actually, Josh, in writing an EG, you know, not in my name. This is how it needs to be done. These are the big issues that I want you to consider, and you know, to be unafraid, to be I tried to get a hashtag going the other day, to be more Andy about things and not back down and just say this is what is needed. So how does the citizen take that power and push it forward to make real estate listen? Adam, I'm going to start with you on that one.
Well, I think, I mean, for me, I'm an architect by background, and one of the reasons I sort of started looking more at more experiential projects is I found architecture so incredibly slow. And so what I would suggest then is, I think what I'm seeing more and more, and COVID has brought it on ever more, is more meanwhile projects, but almost like an always meanwhile mentality. So I was talking to Roger Madlin about this recently, about Canada Water, and he was talking about creating an open framework where many, many different organizations, small ones, not-for-profits, charities, partners, could get involved in a way that was beginning to prototype what that new built environment in Canada Water might become. And I thought that was a wonderful thought, because here are small, fast-moving things. It's easy for people to get involved. There's less kind of, you know, sort of financial pressures. It's a better way to prototype. And then you can use that to both rehearse that community involvement, but then also work out what is really connecting with people, how you actually complete the neighborhood. And I think that's what I want to see more of. I want to see more of almost a beta permanent way of thinking about the built environment. And I think, you know, so many developers uncertain of what to build right now, and knowing that we need more blur, we need a greater mix of activities, should start to be almost taking a leaf out of Silicon Valley and thinking about this always meanwhile way of working. And I think that would more easily then better involve the neighborhood as a whole. So that would be my answer to you.
Excellent. If we don't know what to do, the best thing to do is ask other people what to do, isn't it? They might have a solution.
Weirdly enough, we're actually working on a public engagement project with PLP Labs, the division from PLP Architecture, and Kumuzi, a citizen digital interaction company. They do awesome work. And a lot of our research that fed into this was, I think people are generally quite daunted and confused in kind of what's real estate, what's planning, what's the council, what's the developer, like what are the key issues I need to focus on? And if I think now, am I trying to resolve a problem from the past, or what do I need to think about for the future? And I think this ambiguity kind of leads to this level of, a sense of like impasse, you know, a sense of entropy or inertia. That's the word I'm looking for. And so one of the project that we're releasing pretty soon is a form of survey, which helps give a kind of like an understanding of health. But then we actually provide a full playbook across 7 key themes to do with issues like governance. And it's asking these questions. So based on the survey, I'm not just trying to sell this, it's a non-profit thing, but it's the idea that, you know, if by result of this survey that, you know, we've inferred that actually you're in an area that's providing you with an undue level of stresses, and you perhaps haven't articulated that there is a lot of agency in your area from a governance perspective, well, how about starting a local community group? And this is very much what Angela Fonzo has done down in Southall, who the community had been blighted by levels of air pollution. The story's been in The Guardian a number of times. We've supported the community group because of the remediation of a former National Grid site. And according to all the policy, everyone was legally compliant in what they've been doing. The reality is the citizens have got sick, because the current legal frameworks do not account for community vulnerability to change, which is even dictated in the WHO guidelines on air pollution, that every assessment has to be locally relevant, and currently it isn't. So, that took a very strong individual to knock on their neighbor's door and go, hey, are you feeling slightly, are you getting this? And if you read the stories, you're just happy you're not them. Let me put it like that, as they sang in Live Aid. I don't mean to denigrate that, so I apologize in that way. But the the whole point is that I think people are quite confused of where to go and where to ask a question. And it's more about setting up the platforms so that if you are a landlord, an investor, a true investor in an area, are you as that principal setting up community action groups? Are you setting up community lobbying groups? Not negative lobbying groups, but what form of representation can you help shape that gives communities their sense of agency to improve that dialogue? And I think it is two ways. I think the citizen does want to do it. I think they're confused. They don't know where to look. We're constantly getting asked by community groups, can you help us here? We think we've got this problem. What about this? Is that? And it's a constant question that the reality, there's a lot of mess caused by the planning system and the legal frameworks and the concept of liability around that. And I think until the industry opens themselves up about that, it will be hard to build that bridge. So I think the citizen does need to get out there, but I think they're also held back through a lot of opaque, a very opaque marketplace and understanding where do I turn rather than where do I complain?
Thanks, Josh. That is a good question, is it? Where do I turn? Not, you know, we love to complain, but actually what everyone really wants to do is help, don't they? And we have a session later on today where we're talking about the collective power of cities. But I wonder actually if it's about the collective power of citizens. And, you know, if someone has experienced something, a community is not just about that, the small local area that it is. The community is us, isn't it? It's nationwide, it's global, and perhaps the power of those communities of individual peoples comes from the collective and how we bring those voices
to
it together. Where is Mum's Net for real estate? There is a question. There's an opportunity for someone there. But that idea of transparency as well, I think, is something that is a great enabler, isn't it? And this ability to be vulnerable to being open is something that would hopefully see real estate and that community engagement improve. And I know I've only got a few minutes left, so I just wanted to sort of go around the table, as it were, to find out from everyone where they think we can do better in enabling that transparency and enabling the citizen to feel more powerful in how they are engaging with the real estate community. And Jen, I'm gonna start with you.
Thanks, Sam. I could have done with a few more minutes. So it is, it's really important for the citizens to be involved in that decision making, but how do we get that message out to them? I suppose one of the key things that we want to do is, and this is what we're kind of doing in Newcastle at the moment, is to create a sort of city vision, a sort of a kind of wider piece, which is all about what the main aims of the city are, which we'll do, you know, which we create alongside citizens, so that people coming into the city to invest or to occupy, you know, create new jobs, etc., actually buy into that visionary piece as well. But I think one of the key things is around the communications and keeping, the key messages pushed out to as many groups as possible. And this will have to be done through different channels and on different platforms and using sort of, you know, slightly tweaked messages. Because actually, you know, the way to reach a lot of our citizens is very different to the way that we reach maybe some of our business community or some of our investors. So I think there is very much something around that sort of comm strategy and actually buying into that wider city vision from our view.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jen. Sarah?
I think for me, I think at the moment, collaboration is key. I think that lots of different people, entities, whether it's local government, whether it's investors, developers, everybody is working in their own respective silos. And I think that's a big issue at the moment. And I think if we do want to kind of get the message out there where citizens can actually feel more empowered and more confident to come forward and voice their opinions about what they want and how they want their communities to look and feel like, it would be easier for everyone to actually come together and try and get that message across. And I think Jen mentioned about communication. I think it's a lot easier to get your message out there and communicate better with people if you have lots of other entities with you at the table. So I think collaboration is key for moving forward. And I think that once we're able to actually come together and, you know, get that message across that this is what we want in our community and this is how we want to move forward, this is how we want to see things, it will get a lot easier for kind of consultations and developments. And we might even see more worthwhile developments popping up in our towns and cities eventually. So I think that is the way that we should be moving forward.
That's a great goal, worthwhile developments, not just meanwhile, but worthwhile. I like it. Thank you. Adam.
Well, I think I'd pick up on those brilliant C words from Sarah and Jen. I think, you know, collaboration and communication, I think is everything here, but I think we need to really celebrate that. So I almost want to see that, you know, it's almost like destination boards, you know, in the same way that, you know, it's confusing going into an airport because how do I know where I'm going? How do I know what flight's happening? I stand underneath the destination board and I get a feeling for this enormously complicated ecosystem in a moment. And I think what we need to do is we need to better make public what is going on. I want to see what small moving parts are. I want to see Cat Friday. I want to see things happening in 2 weeks' time. I want it to be more fun, more engaging. I want these developers to step forward. I want them to be impresarios. I want them to care, attraction, involvement, and belonging. And then I think that will draw us together. And in that sense, I think that will mean that you can be socially useful, is commercially astute, because you will build that brand, build that reputation, build that connection with each positive encounter. And so that's what we should ask of our developers, and we should help them because it could be fun, and I think we need more fun. Over.
Amen to that, more fun, definitely. Josh, we just got a short time left. What's what C word are you going to leave us with?
Care.
Nice. and that's
just
it. Care.
Give a damn.
Be more.
Yeah.
Give a damn. Care.
Solve someone's allow problem. People. You know, someone said to me about voting is find the person you know struggling the most and vote for them. And I think that's how we also have to think about our built environment. Find the people who really understand what are problems, and then you've really got a USP. So yeah. Care about the places you're going into. Imagine that they're your brothers, your sisters, your aunties, your uncles, your mums, your dads, whomever they may be. Care like they're your own. And I think that's when you'll change.
Fantastic. What a powerful place to end. Thank you so much for this conversation. It's been fantastic. I wish we could go on longer, but we have run out of time. But for now, huge, huge thank yous to Josh, Jen, Sarah, and Adam. And thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the EG Property Podcast. We hope you found the content insightful and helpful. If you'd like more of the same and to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, be sure to sign up to all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.